We are back. We talked in the first segment a bit about the Taxol debacle. We do have some good news, however, where government and medicine meet. The Supreme Court, a couple months ago, voted for the third time in the last 4 years that federal law doesn't automatically safeguard health plans from state insurance laws that might offer protection to physicians and patients. And the justices said it unanimously. The High Court ruled in April that the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, that's ERISA or ERISA, Act of 1974, does not preempt state laws that require health plans to include doctors, pharmacists, and other health professionals in networks if they meet the plan's criteria. This took place in Kentucky. They had a statute commonly known as the Any Willing Provider Law, which many other states have as well. And people don't really realize this, but HMOs are able to use this ERISA law to be considered as employee benefits, which it puts them in a very special legal category, making them sort of bulletproof in terms of lawsuits. How does that work? Well, let's say your son doesn't get an appendectomy because the HMO that he's a part of gives him the runaround. Let's say he dies. Under ERISA, you're not able to sue the HMO for the death of the child. You can't sue, however, for the lost value of the appendectomy. In other words, if the appendectomy costs $1,500, you might be able to sue for the grand sum of $1,500. And under these ERISA laws, HMOs are able to avoid antitrust litigation, apparently. Everybody knows that the way they organize things determines how medicine gets practiced, but yet it's not considered the same sort of deal as if a group of doctors get together and decide how medicine might be practiced. Doctors can be sued under antitrust laws. HMOs cannot. But they're being chipped away at and being made to behave by the legal system, and to that I say bravo. It's maybe a little odd that as a physician I find myself rooting for some of the lawyers on this one, but hey, you know, politics makes strange bedfellows, doesn't it? I don't know if you noticed this story last month, but The Bee, May 22nd, 2003. Front page story, city water meters stalled. Now, apparently, according to this, according to The Bee, Christine Kehoe, a Democrat from San Diego, was outraged over the fact that people in Sacramento were grandfathered in on a law that allows them to use water without meters. Now, the McClatchy family owns the Sacramento Bee. About the turn of the century, one of the McClatchys visited Paris. He was very impressed by the number of trees that were in the city of Paris. He came back and thought it would be a good idea to plant a lot of trees in Sacramento. Now, people from all over the world, when they come to Sacramento, are impressed by the fact that we have these stately, large trees providing shade in the downtown area. Frankly, I live in Sacramento, and I bought my house largely because of the trees that were around it. I don't have air conditioning, and I'm able to get by, most of the time, pretty comfortably without it. But apparently a legislator from San Diego objects to the fact that we freely water our trees up here. She thinks that we should put meters. Now, the county of Sacramento has estimated this will cost $100 million to install meters on 110,000 homes that currently don't have them. And the point of all this is that once you put meters on, and according to the laws they want to pass, and force you to pay higher rates, this will result in water savings. Now, this means that there'll be more water in the reservoirs. I'm rather disgusted to report that the Sierra Club and the Friends of the River, both of which are groups that I belong to and support, have been suckered in by Southern California water interests into supporting this as an environmental issue. It is not. If water is not put into the ground for the benefit of trees and for the benefit of downtown Sacramento, and is left in our reservoirs. It will then be pumped out of their reservoirs into the California Water Project and sent south, where they grow cotton with this water in the San Joaquin Valley. Cotton, a crop that requires a lot more water than rice. And it also allows real estate developers in Southern California to continue to spread urban sprawl all over the brown, dusty, dry hills south of the Tehachapis. Now, as a good former Aggie, I don't drive an SUV. I wouldn't consider doing so. I ride my bicycle frequently. I compost. I recycle. As mentioned, I don't have air conditioning because I bought a house that allowed me not to need it. I think it's very important to think globally and act locally. I think it's very important to conserve. I think it's very important to behave in an environmentally responsible way. Unfortunately, if Southern California water interests get their way and we put meters in Sacramento and force people to use less water with higher prices, it just means the water will be put in the aqueduct and shipped south, where, by the way, something like 50% of it evaporates en route. Does it make sense to you to save 10 gallons in Sacramento so that 5 gallons can evaporate and 5 gallons can help them water the stiffs in Forest Lawn in LA? I don't think so. All right, that's enough of that. Last story of the program. Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, with its ecstatic Ode to Joy, was sold in May for $3.47 million to an anonymous buyer. The work was completed by the frustrated and by then deaf composer in 1823. When performed the next year, it was met with wild acclaim and was later credited with influencing other great composers, including Schubert. I can't think of a better way to end this program today than with that incredible piece of music. So let's do that. We'll see you next Thursday. This is Radio Parallax. This program was produced by Edward McMillan. I'm your host, Douglas Everett. Stay tuned for Todd Urich and Hometown Atrocities to follow.